QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KSXQ. Net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Ernie, hearing none there. May have a few of these pop up later on. Tech Tuesday announcements, as we normally have here. We will be doing a few more radio field exercises here in the upcoming months if this weather holds out. Don't know if it is, so we'll have to see. Anyway, topic for the evening, I'm going to talk a little bit about diversity communications, but we got a lot of other side topics, EME stuff, satellite stuff, so stay tuned. Alrighty, we'll now call the roster of the people who are out there just about every week. WB6CLZ Mike, how are you doing out there? You out there? I know you are.
Sure, we are here in Placentia. Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is WB6CLZ in warm Placentia.
All right, Mike, glad to hear you out there. How about WB6CIN? Cindy.
Good evening, Tom. Looking forward to emergency communications tonight.
All right, Cindy, glad to have you out there. Let's see, don't know if he's back. I think he was going to be on a trip. KA6CIA, George. Nothing heard. KE6QI, Nancy. Nothing heard. We'll try Harry. KE6RJ, Harry, are you out there? Nothing heard. How about AF6ZJ? Guy, are you out there from Rosemont? How about KI6SKN, Chris?
Good evening, KI6SKN.
Hey, good evening there, Chris. Beautiful day, I know. Great weather out there. How about KJ6HZS, Mike?
Evening, Tom and Annette. KJ6HZS, no traffic. Hey, maybe tomorrow you could swing by. I'll give you my radio and you'd help me program that thing. I'll be up in Sugarloaf again tomorrow.
Okay, Mike, roger that. Yeah, had a very busy, well, kind of busy day. Anyway, and courtesy check-in for your dad here, K6EKX, if he's out there in the repeater. How about KJ6FIL, Mike?
Good evening, all. KJ6FIL.
Hey, Mike, glad to have you out there. I think you guys are going to warm up a little bit over the next few days, but hey, makes it more worthwhile when you come up on the hill. All right, how about KJ6KDL, Jim?
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK.
All right, Jim. Don't know if you're still. We're still having intermittent charter. At this time of day, they decide they don't want to work anymore until about 9 o'clock, so I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, all right, W6GZI, Frank. And nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly. And nothing heard. K6GVL, Ron. Bird. How about N6BOP, Ann? Nothing heard. How about 86PL, Harold, Riverside? Alrighty, how about K6LCS, Quint?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom and Annette, K6LCS.
All right, Quint. Oh, good deal there. Make sure I'm transmitting, I guess, here. How about KJ6MFO? Jay, are you out there? Yeah, nothing heard. How about W6AWL, Art? Nothing heard. W6JLM, Judith. Yeah, nothing heard. I think they're wood stacking today. W6KMM, Ken. All right, let's skip down to somebody who's here. How about K6YNW, Chris?
Good evening, K6YNW.
Hey, Chris, glad to have you out there. KD6LAN, Bill. Nothing heard there. Moving on down, let's see. We have AE6CK. Victor, are you out there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is Alpha Echo 6, Charlie Kilo.
All right, Victor. Boy, you're missing some beautiful weather up here. It's almost like it's turning into summer again. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
Hey, Rod, were you on vacation the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, we spent a month at the beach or something.
Well, that'll get you really burnt. Okay, glad to have you back. How about KB6LTY, Christy, Apple Valley? All right, and wrapping up a couple here. See if NQ7RD, Rick in Corona, are you there? And I haven't heard, don't know if he's still down. He's probably in his other net. K6TUX, Key. Well, he may join us in a bit. All right, that's the list as I have it. Anybody else out there like to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q.
ZJ.
WA6, Mike Queen Fox.
All right, I got an AJ there, and I got WA6 Mike Queen Fox. Bob, sorry, should have called you there. Anybody else?
KJ6 OX Lucerne Valley.
All right, Lucerne Valley, glad to have you with us this evening. Anybody else?
K2AAC, Tonawanda on the air.
All right, check in there on Echolink. Glad to have you with us on Tech Tuesday this evening. This is KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. All right, well, Mike, let's kick it back to the DX report. Mike, what's happening out there? Want to lead off with WB6CLZ? What's happening?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, lots of cool stuff. As you probably have heard many times before, 10 meters is my favorite band. And by golly, it's hotter than blazes. Hadn't done much today because we were in transition between Big Bear. But turned on the radio this afternoon on 10 meters and right off El Salvador. And this is with 5 watts, by the way, on 10 meters. Second contact was Japan. Then Guadalajara, Mexico. And then, this is probably the second or third time I've worked them, but probably the second time on 10 meters. The DX Expedition, T-32 Charlie, they're just north of Australia, I believe. believe it is, at what used to be Christmas Island, and I cannot for the life of me pronounce the new name of that island, but he gave me a 5.5 with 5 watts. Then the last one was in Australia, so kind of cool. Space weather right now is reporting 80, sunspot number of 87, and the solar flux index is sitting at 126 solar flux units. But things are hopping, things are hot. All the HF bands, the higher HF bands are really cooking right now. So we're getting into cycle 24, and it's looking good. Anyway, gosh, I know there's other guys out there that have been working DX and probably have a lot of other things because they've spent more time on it, but let's see what's going on. This WB6CLZ, back to you, Tom, Net Control.
Hey, Mike, appreciate that. Yeah, fantastic. Just love to hear those reports of working 5 watts so far away. And real quick again, Mike, for any of you listeners out there, that's on your loop, I take it, or is that on a dipole?
Actually, now that I have corrected a problem, I have an MA5 Cushcraft mini beam. It's a trapped three-element Yagi of a kind of a different configuration than a Yagi, but it's kind of a cool beam. You can look it up on either the Cushcraft site or Google it. But it's a MA Mike Alpha 5. It's a little mini beam, and it's sitting up about 40 feet.
Well, that's cool. It's always neat to play around with stuff like that. Hey, that's what it's all about. It's a lot of fun. So, well, I know we have other people out there working DX also. Let's see. I think we heard Chris out there. Chris, did you have something you'd like to share with us? KI6SKN, please come back to KS6Q.
Tom, KI6SKN here. Yeah, I'm pretty much about the same as Mike. Mike's got a few of them I don't have, but otherwise pretty much the same. I didn't hear him mention. I got a hold of South Africa. It was a couple days ago. New Zealand, Belgium, which is one I haven't made contact too often, and the usual Japan, Australia, and I made the Christmas Island one this evening, goofing around for a little bit. That's about it. Back to you, Tom.
Okay, Chris, and I know, I think that's, I'm going to assume you're using your ZS6 BKW, kind of a refined and shortened, but refined and well-tuned dipole there. Were you running just 100 watts, or did you have to run any more power than that? That's pretty awesome down there in South Africa.
Yes, I was, I am running the BKW, the ZS6 BKW antenna, and running 100 watts, and to tell you the truth, on 10 meter, I was running a lot less than that. I was 3-1 SWR, but I figured it was enough to get out, and it was getting out pretty good this evening on 10.
Well, that's pretty awesome, and we'd love to share with everybody out there. We always have a lot of listeners, and actually we found we have a lot of new listeners that are listeners only, which is fantastic. Glad to have everybody out there. Bob, WA6MQF. Now, I know you have an EME project, but let's stick to the DX stuff first if you have anything there, and then we'll get back to you with the EME after the satellite stuff. So from Quint. Any DX there, Bob?
Oh yeah, WA6MQF here. I've been jumping up and down this week because I worked two new countries for me, number 304 and 305. The guys Mike was talking about, I also worked them. The T3 countries are North, Central, and Southern Kiribati, Mike. At least that's my take on the pronunciation. Also, there's a DX position ongoing in the North Sea. It's a rock sticking up out of the water with a lighthouse on it. And there have been a bunch of European guys that they had a three-week de-expedition planned, and they rotate each week. And I finally got through there. Massive pileup because a lot of people needed that country. Hadn't been on the air in many, many, many years. And also, Yeah, the East Timor, which was another new country, they just wrapped up here in this last week. But I, like Mike, and the 10 meters was just wide open. The Europeans were giving the U.S. stations 10, 20 over 9, saying they hadn't heard a signal that loud on 10 meters in the last 7 years, comments like that. So you guys work towards your upgrade of licenses so that you can get on 10 meters because it's really blooming. And anyway, that's my activity. Yeah, I mailed off two QSL requests and am sitting anxiously awaiting the return of the card. And let's see, I have a TH3 at 45 feet and I run about 500 watts. That's my station, WA6FQF.
Okay, Bob, fantastic, and we'll call for anybody else out there in just a moment. If you've got a tech license out there, not a general, you're listening in here on the repeater, one thing about 10-meter band, Bob, actually there's a sliver there that technicians can use, tech class licensed people can use, and it's just going to be enough of you to get the bug if you get out there and start contacting places like this. If you get some equipment, look around, look on eBay, look at something used. It doesn't have to be brand new, by golly. You know, it's and you'll always have a lot of help from us right here on the net, throwing up an antenna. Most of the guys out there with these DX reports that we're getting right now tonight are homemade antennas, except for Mike, who's cheating now with a store-bought. But anyway, yeah, a lot of good stuff out there. Yeah, it's really exciting, and look forward to hearing more people out there. And when you're ready to upgrade, just, you know, give me a holler because we test once a month. Anybody else out there with any DX reports, please come back. KF6Q. All right, hearing none, and I know there's a lot more out there, but anybody, anything to add, please come back at any point in time. Clint, K6LCS in Harupa Valley, what's happening? Anything else new with the satellites? Anything new to report? What's going on out there?
Hey, there's some fun this afternoon at the California Science Center where NASA's Chuck Bolden, an administrator for NASA, signed over the pink slip to the shuttle Endeavour to Southern California this afternoon. Yeah, can you just imagine waiting in line for about an hour at DMV, handing the clerk a slip of ownership and say, can you please transfer this vehicle for us? And it's a space shuttle. Anyway, we're getting it next year. But it was just a cool ceremony out at the Exposition Park. So our space shuttle Endeavour will be with us the last half of 2012. They're going to fly it out on top of the 747 to LAX, and then going to drive it ceremoniously through the streets of LA to Exposition Park. So that'll be fun next year. I personally am gearing up for Pacificon this weekend. Gordo will be there presenting. I'm there presenting. I'm actually doing my satellite show twice on Saturday. It's also Jamboree on the air for the scouts this weekend. And one of our astronauts wants to talk to us on the 2-meter voice frequency pairs. The only pass we have for us up in Central California is at 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. Because remember, the astronauts work on GMT time. So that's 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning, their time. So hopefully a little after 3 in the morning on Saturday, we'll be working the ISS as it goes over Pacificon in Santa Clara. We have a bunch of passes on Saturday. 50, Arisat 1 is due to go over, 27, 51, 50 again in the afternoon. So we should have a bunch of fun on Saturday at Pacificon in Santa Clara. AMSAT has an annual symposium. It's coming to the West Coast this year. It's coming to San Jose. I'm the, if you guys want to... You thought being secretary or our membership list chairperson for your club was a thankless job. I'm the prize chairperson for the AMSAT symposium. Boy, it is a an interesting job. I'm collecting all sorts of neat stuff, lots of stuff coming to the house, UPS and FedEx boxes as door prizes and raffle prizes. But the AMSAT symposium is up in San Jose, November 4 through 6. Friday the 4th of November through the 6th. Room rate at the San Jose Wyndham Hotel is $79 a night. As far as the FM birds, Arisat 1 is still working for us. Not really very well at night. Not very well when it's not in the sun. AO27 is fine. SO50 is fine. 51 with one dead battery and another cell dying. It's working at with a third of its power gone. It's pumping out 850 milliwatts for us, and it does work into the evening. Very, very exciting. And the ISS, its packet is on. And this weekend, listen for the scouts and others trying to make contact with the astronauts this weekend. For you sideband folks, 7 and 52 are up. 29, something wrong with FO-29. Has not been on for the last week after being really strong before that. And that's about it, Tom. When I come back from Pacificon on October 27th, I've got the San Gorgonio Amateur Radio Club. I've got a session down there. And I do not have a question of the week for us. But if you have any questions, I'll try to answer. K6LCS.
Well, Clint, quick question there now. Where is the Endeavor going to, where are they going to, is that at the Museum of Science there, right by USC?
Correct. It's going to be brought to us the second half of 2012 at the California Science Center there at Exposition Park. And that, you want to see, I think there's going to be some cool video of that being driven across the streets of L.A. to Exposition Park from LAX. That's going to be fun next year.
Yeah, I can imagine that's going to be an awesome sight and traffic jam, no doubt. Real quick there, Clint, would you say still for any of the newcomers out there who are interested in satellite work with their HTs or whatever, is a handheld Arrow really about the best and most economical way to get started?
Not the Arrow and the Elks are over $100 for either one of them. For $15, that's $15, you can build yourself a tape measure Yagi and get in the world of high gain and work the FM birds with tape measure Yagi. You go to my website, go to the satellite pages at k6lcs.com, k6lcs.com. There's plans to build your own tape measure Yagi, and I've successfully worked the FM birds with that. I would say on the ultimate side of things, yeah, that Arrow or Elk to make things really, really, it's almost like cheating using those. They're so efficient.
Yeah, and I had a link to it, and I think he's now being hosted by somebody else, but there was a ham in Mexico that had his clone version. Actually, it added an extra element to the 7 and 3 that I believe the Arrow comes with. Homemade version. Even the diplexer was homemade. Pretty cool. Pretty neat. And looked really clean, I guess, you know, for a few bucks, of course, but definitely not 100. So, all right, well, Clint, appreciate that. Fantastic.
That link is on my website, Alex's dual Yagi UDA design. It's all on my antennas page at my satellite site. But, yeah, it's a fun project also. K6Ls, yes.
All right. Well, before we get involved with some of the emergency communications, we were hoping to get Art on tonight. Art W6AWL was back east when Hurricane Irene hit through New York on Long Island there. He was on the, I think, of the northeastern part of Long Island. Fortunately, I don't hear him out there. Art, are you with us this evening, or are you still gone?
Thomas, good evening. Mobiling back from dinner. We just saw Rachel a farewell tonight. And we're listening to you. Here I come past Baker's Pond. W6AWL.
Well, Art, fantastic. Glad to see her off. I know she's done a lot for the Valley over the years. For those of you who do not know, Rachel is moving up north. She was involved with cert training there at Bear City Fire. We've also one of the fire investigators and about a million other different things she worked on. So she's moving out here. So anyway, that's sad. Well, Art, I'll tell you what, when you get back, I'll let you mobile back to your house. If you have a chance, appreciate some information on your experiences back there with Irene. And we'd like to have a little spot for you tonight discussing that.
Okay, I'm just passing the senior center, so give me a few to get up in the loaf and get this thing parked. And I can tell you a little bit about the soggy New York weather and the East Coast. Be happy we're here, but we come back 2 days later, you make it snow on us. Okay, thanks. Welcome home.
Ah, but we kicked in the sunshine. Here it is. All right, Art, give me a holler when you get back to the house there. Bob, WA6MQF has got an ongoing project. I think he's finally got his four Yagis in the air. And this is for EME, which is Earth, Moon, Earth. For those of you out there who do not know what that is, it's where amateur radio people like us, we bounce our signal off the moon, use it as a giant reflector to talk to people on the other side of the world. Why do we do that? Because it's fun. Go ahead, Bob, WA6MQF. Fill us in on the new details.
Roger, Tom. Well, it's still ongoing, but it's getting real close to lighting it up. This last week, with the help of my nephew, a ham from Northern California, and Bud here in town, we assembled the rooftop mast, rotators, H-frame. If you think of a big giant H, the 13-element boomers are mounted at the top and the bottom of each leg of the H. And so it doesn't sound so much that way, but when people ask me about it, I say, well, if it was just one antenna you were talking about, it would have a 60-foot boom and 52 elements. It's actually four 13-element Cushcraft boomers and a four-port M-squared power combiner divider. And all of that stuff's up, and I'm waiting for the low-noise amplifier, preamplifier. And I also have mounted a TV camera aligned with the antennas, and I have a little monitor at the operating position. And when I finally hear a signal coming from the moon, I'll take a grease pencil and put a circle on my monitor, and then I will very easily, hopefully, this is all, of course, theoretical, being able to aim it at the moon. Maybe next weekend I'll have it up and running. WA6, oh, let's see. I currently have a 100-watt Icon 746 radio I'm going to use, but I also have an 800-watt output amplifier that just needs a little more cooling fans, and then I'll have 800 watts up at half-inch heliacs to the antenna. Anyway, that's where I am right now. Back to Tom, WA6MQF.
Okay, Bob, appreciate that information as you're going in your spare time, and I know that you are off the hill and on the hill with work and whatnot, and when you get a chance, of course, that's your free time is what you've been putting into that, and you're making progress. That's a good thing. A lot of us start projects, myself included, that they kind of get started and they get backburnered, as we say, but good deal. Fantastic, and it sounds like you're just about there. Love to hear some of the reports when it's all up and running and you've got it all put together there. And, you know, like the Bob's right here in Big Bear City, and I'm sure sometime in the future you'd be more than happy to have somebody who's interested come by and give it an eyeball. So, not a problem. Let me reset. Well, anyway, good deal. And all these different features, satellite, DXing, on some of the bands that are available for Tech, Earth, Moon, Earth. And one thing we have never done here on Tech Tuesday is even delve into the microwave bands. And that's a whole other story in itself, but maybe one of these days we'll get there. Mike, you know, you and I were discussing earlier, emergency communications. Definitely has been a year for weather. What do you think about all that riffraff back there? I think we've been lucky out here in the West Coast so far.
We really have. We get a little this and that and that thing that came through last week, but we actually have. I think it's been 1936, I believe, was the last time a hurricane snuck up from Mexico, and I think it hit Long Beach and did a lot of damage. But, we've been lucky. We've had some thunder and lightning storms that were a little stronger than we'd like up there, but, basically, we've been pretty lucky. But I'm looking at my QST right now, and it's talking about the one that hit Alabama back in April 2011. That sounds like that was a pretty nasty one. They had, hundreds of people killed or injured. So back to you, Tom.
Okay, Roger that. I think the agency, HAM agency, as we would call it, AARES, AARES, and amateur, was that Amateur Radio Emergency Services or something like that? Hit me if I'm wrong. It could be. But anyway, stepped in and was helping with all the efforts back there, Mike. And you've probably had a bigger chance to read that than me, but you want to expand a little bit on that. Go ahead.
Well, this is out of the September QST and page 63-64. This September QST was the special emergency communications and public service issues, so there's a lot of good information in here. Basically, we are talking about 11 days of operation from a little bit before the storm hits to really after they got everything restored and back up and running. Not permanent, but they did have communications and stuff going, so they figured that the need was not there anymore for the amateur radio communicators. Let's see. They were passing traffic for 11 days, like I said, and over 1,000 pieces of traffic were passed in the first 36 hours. Medical rescue requests, delivery navigation, injury reports, shelter communications, and they say thankfully lots of welfare, like we're okay messages to pass. Let's see. I'm going to break to reset for a second. Reset. And like I say, it took 11 days until reliable communications were restored to all of the affected areas. And in a lot of cases, that was just the basic communications. They call them COWs. They're mobile cell phone towers on wheels. They're cell phone trucks that have cell phones on them, and that got service up and running and got everybody going. Let's see here. Well, back to you, Tom. I'll give you a comment. I'll give you some more in a minute.
Okay, Mike. And this is something that's always going to happen in the future. No matter what, we're going to have either a weather-related incident or we may have something in the realm of earthquakes if you're out here on the West Coast, and I guess lately even on the East Coast. they're just about everywhere. But between earthquakes and natural weather, storms or severe storms that come through, all of these different things, it could be anything from freeze outs up in the north, hurricanes on the East Coast, tornadoes through the Midwest, and all assorted things. Basically, there's always things happening like this, and it will continue to happen. If you're a ham radio operator and you would like help out in one of these circumstances, there's many different organizations out there to join as a volunteer, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. But if you just want to listen in, sometimes you can actually be a monitor out there and kind of keep your ears open on some of the HF bands. Even if you're not licensed to transmit, you can always listen. That's allowed. Let me reset. And like Mike said out there, quite often, as everybody out there relies on cell phones, guess what? They are the first thing that goes away. And we have used them as a crutch for so long. And I think, was that a mobile truck, kind of like a mobile, like a cell tower on wheels? Is that what that was?
That's what they call it. They call it a cow, like a cow. And it's a mobile cell on wheels truck. Sounds kind of cool.
to get that move, I said, Murr. Okay, I lived in Roma for a while. Clint's still down there. But anyway, so cell phones go away, and a lot of people out there who are so reliant upon that, and things like running water, electricity, actual broadcast news and whatnot, all this can go away. And I guarantee there's always room out there for support, always room out there for those who want to volunteer and help, and that's an option. It's always an option. So, well, anyway, Mike, I think as we delve into this next year and this fall, let me reset.
K6CUX wishing everybody a nice evening. 73.
Hey, Gee, glad to hear you out there poking your head in there. This is KF6Q, Tech Tuesday Net, and all of us here on Tech Tuesday wishing Gee a happy birthday. Just turned 84. We would sing Gee, but it'd probably break the repeater.
Break the repeater would not be too bad, but he may be able to snow, and I don't think I will like that.
Right. Well, we don't want any more snow up here, but I know it's going to come. Well, we have to. That's our winter sports up here. What am I saying, by golly? That's always good for the valley. So, well, good hearing you out there, Gee. Like I said, there's a lot of different things out there for emergency services. What we're going to be doing here in the upcoming weeks and into next year is we will be cycling in prime articles from QST, from the ARRL. And we'll expand on those. If you are a member of the ARRL and you get that issue or get the issues, we'll be pulling from that stuff and discussing that, along with all the other different things that we do on Tech Tuesday. Let me reset. And if you do get QST, you will know, as I do, the type of articles is vast and wide. Anything from electronics to belted issues to also current events, what's going on out there in the world. So a lot of good information, great stuff. Mike, anything to add to that before we move on?
No, Tom, as I'm scanning this article, and I didn't realize there was so much going on in an emergency. I mean, I've never been in the executive end. I'm just way down on the totem pole. But these guys were operating stations and shelters, command posts, distribution points, temporary triage centers, feeding stations, temporary operations headquarters for the Red Cross, and portable kitchens. I mean, a lot going on. Needed a lot of people out there, a lot of boots on the ground, I guess, operating radio.
And if anybody out there is listening, if you're a newcomer to ham radio, this is the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. But there are a zillion frequencies out there. How much is a zillion? Well, I know there's thousands right here on the 2-meter band, just as an example. And many, many bands, a lot of different frequencies out there. Not a problem with overcrowding. Basically, there's a lot of space there. As long as we keep it organized, and that's the main thing. So if you happen to hear emergency traffic on this repeater, please yield to that. If we have that in operation, if something happens, please yield to that, as that is priority. But anyway, let's see if we can get W6AWL. Maybe he's destinated out there, even though that is not a word. Art, are you back at your QTH?
Howdy, Tom. Yeah, just walked in here. Could hear you yapping all the way through the house, but we pulled in, sat down. And what can I do for you this evening?
Well, Art, glad to have you back here. And as we all know, in the last 3-4 years, possibly more, you've done a lot to organizing emergency communication groups up here in the Valley. Appreciate that. You took a trip there for 2 months to go back to New York and got there just in time to experience Hurricane Irene. I'm assuming that you were on Long Island when that happened, and maybe you could just share a little bit of that experience. I've never been in a hurricane, don't really want to be, but what happened?
Well, I lived through a few in the past being there. If you can picture what that Long Island is, it's long and it goes from New York City out east. We were at my mother-in-law's on almost near the eastern end of the North Shore on the Sound facing Connecticut, a little bit higher ground. You know, an earthquake comes and goes, and I got blamed for the one they had in Virginia that moved furniture in our house up there on Long Island when it happened. But the hurricane, they knew where it was coming and where it was going. And it's a rare one. It doesn't usually hang on to the coast like that. Let me reset. So there's plenty of local repeater action. I had taken my book. I had a radio. I had the truck radio. I'm listening. Talked to quite a few of them. They all sound the same, by the way. And they continued to tell you what was going on and where it was. One of the unique things about the East Coast, when you're outside of New York City, all of the fire services, ambulance services are volunteers. So there's a lot more of them, and many of them that I've talked to were actually ham radio operators. So there's a lot of that intercommunications that works together in that Northeast area. So they knew what was going on. But it was 2 days coming, a day and a half there, and I tell you, about 10 days before services were renewed to many of the areas. Back to you, Tom.
So we know, at least from satellite and imagery and all that good stuff that we've been able to have over the last, I don't know how many decades and decades, we do have a forewarning and about a day and a half to get through there. Services that were not available, and you say you're almost out for about 10 days, I'm going to assume that one of those is telephone. How about power? Power, water, things like that. Was that affected, or how did you fend with that?
Yeah, their biggest problem was power. We never lost it where we were located, but so many other areas that were in the track, the south shore of the island was hit by floods, just blew the ocean right up onto this thing. Long Island itself is nothing but one great big sandbar. So they covered a lot of the southern part of it, and they lost power. When you lose power, you lose everything. Water's pumped. It's got to have power to get it there. Anymore today, most all phones are run by power and through the internet systems that we all have. And, of course, you know, we know the system of cell phones as one of the first things to go. If it doesn't go completely down, emergency services take it over.
Matt?
Okay, do we have a breaker in there? Go ahead.
I have some comments, WA6MQF here. I lived through a forest fire. If you're interested in the fire issue, I can comment on those. Over.
Okay, Bob, if you want to stand by, I appreciate that. That's very good, valuable information as we're kind of working around emergency communications this evening. And then Art, so essentially, no power, no water, no phone service. We were kind of wondering why we hadn't heard from you for a while, and now we know. Of course, it was probably a no-brainer there on that one, that I figured that pretty much everything had been wiped out back there. And that's, Art, you say you've been through this once or twice before, is that correct?
Well, yes, I was born back there on that island and was there for 25, 26 years before we started moving away from it. So it had happened a number of times before and had gotten a lot of parts wet. At that point, I was only about 6 miles outside New York City and on the South Shore. That really gets hammered when something comes up along the coast that way. But the big deal with... all the communicators and with the firefighters that, again, are volunteers. A community the size of Big Bear City, which has, you know, the number of guys on duty that we've all met. Our fire company covering the same territory had 100 members. So when you start pulling them out and getting a number of them amateur radio licenses and getting that coordination together, there's a lot of things that happen on a volunteer basis. And I was participating and listening to a number of them there. There's one major linked system that goes all through the island as to where most everybody's on. Even though there was not a major activity that they had to do it, they were still guiding people, and there was many shelters set up because of the people in the from the Hamptons to JFK who had to get out of there. That was all closed, and they were made to evacuate.
Well, you know, when we have what we call a natural disaster, or something that happens like that, and we know that there have been many in the past, and there will definitely be many in the future. I think that Art, maybe not tonight, but maybe in the next few weeks, we want to get into more into emergency services and stuff like this. Even though we're working into the winter, nobody said we can't have a 9-point-something earthquake in the winter. Nobody said we can't have, you know, severe snow conditions like we had just 2 years ago. So it could happen with earthquakes. It can be 10 minutes from now, or it could be 10 years from now. We just don't know. So we always have to be prepared for that. And Art, that is one thing there that at least you've experienced that, and we can get into that a little bit further. Let me reset. Also this year, unusually high amount of tornadoes. Yes, you're safer if you get off the coast. No, you're not. My wife's relatives in Kentucky and Ohio and all through that area there, just huge tornado, oh, you want to call it tornado alley. There's a bunch of them. Tornado superhighway. Different thing about tornadoes. They can travel 60, 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour across the terrain. If you're going to try to outrun it with a car, you're going to have a problem with that, especially if the road is just blowing stuff in front of you. Let me reset. And tornadoes, we'll get into that probably a little bit later on or another evening. But Bob, WA6MQF, experiencing a firestorm of some sort. Please come back.
Roger, WA6MQF here. Well, I've experienced big forest fire and also an earthquake. First of all, just a general comment to help yourself out. It's great to have a walkie-talkie and some sort of a charger that you can charge with your car. I was evacuated where I lived in Nevada City. The 49er forest fire about 10 or 12 years ago burned 50 square miles, leveled 500 homes, burnt my neighbors out on three sides, and I was hovering in a motel wondering what the heck was going on, and I just happened to have my HT with me that I programmed to one of the Nevada County fire frequencies, and I could listen and hear. And you can't do anything. The professional services are doing what's best to be done. And if you're displaced like I was, it was great just to have some sort of a radio and get what I would consider firsthand information. And an HT with a 12-volt charger, you can listen to it. When the battery goes low, go out and start your car and charge it up again. Worked very well for me. When the fire came very quickly to our place, and at first I thought, God, I'm going to rush in there and grab all my expensive radios and haul all this stuff out. Then I sort of got angry. I said, I'm not going to let a fire turn me into a crazy man. I'm going to reset here. And I just went back and got my HT and a charger and stuff, and we, you know, loaded up a few family things. And we were out for almost a week. Fortunately, the peripheral didn't go down, but just being sort of a helpless person in the middle of all this turmoil, it was nice to at least hear what was happening. Also, now, different subject. I was in San Francisco when the big earthquake hit there during the World Series. I was there with a TV truck. We were doing a TV pickup at Giant Stadium. And, man, everything went down. There were two trucks because it was a big split. And we didn't have enough shore power to power all of the TV equipment. And so the production managers flipped a coin and we lost. And we had to go get a generator. Well, almost all of the feeds came out after the earthquake from our TV truck at the stadium. If the ENG equipment could get there, then we had an uplink and a generator, and a lot of the immediate feeds came out of us, which is the other thing. For your own personal functioning and assistance to others, if you can have some sort of non-shore power, either a generator with some gas or some solar panels lying around, and a real big one hits, either fires or anything that wipes out the infrastructure, having some sort of portable power. I have a couple of solar panels I just have leaning in the garage, but I know how to use them if need be. Anyway, a source of power is really one of the essential items. Anyway, that's it, Tom, WA6MQF.
Yeah, Bob, I remember when that hit. I remember where I was when that hit, down here, and all what had gone on. Question, as you know, you were in that area, and we know that power goes out, basically. We lose that. They try to get that back on. I know with a big city, it's probably going to start coming back up, hopefully quicker, and that's an assumption, and that is just that, an assumption. How was that general situation up there with power? How many days, what areas were out? What of that actually affected you with your job up there?
I stayed right at the baseball stadium when we had a big generator because we had a portable satellite uplink along with a big TV truck and all the cameras and production equipment and stuff. And for the first 8 hours after the disaster, we were one of the few places that was technically on the air. And when that became known, then all the news people came in. But I also had, of course, had my HD, hardly go anywhere without that, and, you know, playing. And they had a solar-powered repeater that they got cobbled together and got running in about 4 hours up on Mount Sutro on a ham frequency. And there was a huge amount of health and welfare traffic on HF beamed out of the Bay Area. I think it took them better part of a week and a half to restore the phone systems. But again, the key to everything was power. You know, there's a lot of radios sitting around with nothing to plug them into that worked. WA6MQF.
You know, that's one thing we take for granted. Second thing is cell phones, or maybe in the reverse order anymore. Here's one to think about. This is a reminder, anybody who's listening out there, 2 years ago, as we're upcoming on the winter of 2011-2012, 2 years ago, January, last part of January, actually of 2010, big snow up here. If you were up here, we were pretty much isolated. Roads were closed all the way in and out of the valley, shut down. We actually were losing power off and on because of different situations, and it was getting back up. Some areas a little bit, you know, a little bit warmer than others. Biggest problem up here was fuel, and I say fuel for plows, fuel, gasoline. Nobody out there really, unless you know somebody who works or owns a gas station. Let me reset. If you've worked at a gas station, or if you know somebody who has worked there or owns one, you have no idea how many times that gas station is filled with a tanker coming up the hill, or even if you're down the hill, it doesn't matter. They are in a constant supply of fuel and gasoline coming in. You cut that off, and you and I go to the pump to get gas, guess what? There is no gas, period. and it's until it gets filled back up again. A lot of stations get multiple deliveries a day, and some get at least every other day. So I'll be reset. It's KF6Q, Tech Tuesday in the group here. Emergency services and communications and events. So if you have a backup generator, one thing to think about, it runs on gasoline. How much gasoline do you have? I know a few people out there have got some backup supplies. One thing to think about, gasoline does go bad over time. Unless you put some stable in there or something. Alternate fuel sources or dual fuel systems, such as propane or natural gas, also good as a backup, alternate. Redundancy, as we call it. Multiple redundancy, always a good thing. So, anyway, things to think about as we're going into this winter. Hopefully we don't see that again, but I will almost bet donuts and dollars that eventually we will get another snowstorm bigger than that one. Bob, were you up here in that snow?
No, I was on a field trip to Malaysia at the time. My son was living in my house, and all he did was grumble because he had to hitchhike out of town when they evacuated everything. But really, generators are expensive, but not that expensive. I have a little Honda that looks like a suitcase, and it's good for 2 kW. And if you just cycle the fuel and don't let it go bad, like you said, and use it to recharge the batteries for and not operate 24/7, that's a good source. Also, just having a couple of solar panels laying around. I've got 2 panels, 7 amps of charge current when the sun is up, is handy also. A lot of radios I have will operate directly off the panels with no battery when the sun is up. WA6MQF.
Yeah, and before we lose thought of that, Mike, WB6CLZ, real quick, the guy who runs both houses on solar. Mike, even on an overcast day, those probably don't put out as much. They're still putting out electricity. Is that correct?
That is correct, Tom. And there is some instances where, you know, on overcast days, I don't mean the late night, early morning, low clouds, but high clouds, overcast type days, we do increase our output sometimes 10-20%, and there's a reason for that, but I don't remember what it was. Yeah, they do. They always put out. I swear, on days with a full moon, sometimes I get a little bit, just not enough to turn the inverter on.
Wow, that's incredible. Saw that on a TV show. Never thought that would be possible, but you know, I guess it could be. Well, anyway, and Bob, like we're talking about that with all this stuff, a lot of people up here in Big Bear, and I'm not going to stress this for people off the hill as much, if you're up here in Big Bear and it's the winter time, we all know that it gets cold. It gets very cold. If you do not have a fireplace, I have here a fireplace. We also have propane heaters. We also have backup electric heaters. We also have backup electric generators. We think we're covered a little bit. somehow there. I think I probably missed something. Oh, yeah, no solar power yet. But anyway, one of the main things, if your house runs with a central heating system, you may have gas. You may have street gas. You may have propane gas, whatever, depending on the system. If central heat, a lot of times that will not come on without power. It just refuses to do so. Let me reset. And in that circumstance, that backup generator may be something you want to look at least supply power to your central heating system so you don't freeze to death. One of the things, also, good idea, just in case, keep lots of blankets handy. And that's just a thought. Well, anyway, anybody else out there, any comments, please come back. We've been kind of hogging the show here with everybody and the people we've had on there. Anybody else with any thoughts or comments, please come back to KF6Q.
LAN.
There he is. Somebody woke him up. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, FYI,
couple of years ago when we had that 2.5 day, 3 day, whatever it was, outage. Those of you that have forced air heating, you still have natural gas, and if you do have a small generator, if your generator is small enough that it won't heat your entire house or run your entire house, if you alternate it between your central heating to power your heating for a while until your fireplace or your stove or whatever can catch up before you switch it to something else. Most central heatings are just plug-ins. That's something you may want to consider. Plug it in temporarily to your central heating and then run your lights or whatever you want to have after that. KD6LAN.
Yeah, Bill, that's a very good point there. I forgot about that. Yeah, a lot of central heats are externally plugged in. I think they're by code have to be. Good point. One thing, and I want to stress this to the utmost, please do not run your generator in your garage. No, don't do that. Try to get it outside. Try to get the exhaust outside. Carbon monoxide buildups, even though the garage floor is generally below the house level, there have been deaths from this, and it's sad, but you want to make sure that generator is well ventilated. Get yourself a 100-foot cord or a 50-foot cord, heavy duty. Get the generator outside, put a cover over it, and then run the power inside with the cord. Don't try to get that generator right next to where you're going to use it. Very, very dangerous. Anybody else out there, any comments or suggestions, please come back to KS6Q.
Your comment, WA6MQF. Do not heat your house with a stove, oven, anything like that.
Bob, go ahead. Expand on that, because I'm going to have to say there are cold mornings when I get up and I feel like broiling something without broiling it. But go ahead and expand on that. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, well, a regular cooking stove, you know, doesn't, if it's modern, it's plugged into the mains for their piezoelectric lighters, but you can light them with a match. But it is not vented. And I've done the same thing. I've gone from a long vacation and come back and the house is an ice cube. Usually it's an apartment or something. And I'll crank up the stove. But I know darn well the dangers. What happens is you will eventually, carbon monoxide, partially burned hydrocarbons, are heavier than air. They'll settle down and fill up your house like water. Eventually they'll rise to the level where you'll breathe them, and when you breathe in carbon monoxide, it dims down the function of the alveoli in the lungs, and you will die of suffocation. Pure and simple. It's not worth the risk. Go out and run around the house, put a jacket on. Don't sit inside in front of a stove and feel the warm heat until you pass out. WA6MQF.
You know, just to expand on that just a little bit more, if you do have a carbon monoxide sensor, very good point there, Bob. Carbon monoxide is heavier than air. Well, what does that mean? Okay, it's going to build up from the floor, zero ground level, and start creeping upwards. I actually saw somebody with a carbon monoxide sensor on a kitchen counter. And I thought, well, let's see, this is about 2 feet above your nose when you're in bed, so you'll probably be dead before you hear this thing go off. And that's pretty much the way that works. They're good to have handy around certain areas, enclosed areas, to see if you're going to have carbon monoxide there. But carbon monoxide, heavier than air. So think about your pets. My dog sleeps on the floor. His nose is about an inch and a half off the floor or more, depending which way he's rolled over. He would be the first to go. So think about that. Anyway, anybody else, any other comments while we're, before we close the net?
SKN.
And KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday. Go ahead, Chris, KI6SKN.
I was kind of running around and don't know if you guys mentioned also, I heard you talking about the forced air units, how they will not work if you don't have electricity. Not just the central air or forced air units, also most wall heaters have blowers in them. And if they don't have 110 volts going to them, those heaters don't come on. I've got one of the old style here and purposely left it in this house. Because it doesn't, it comes on no matter what. It doesn't have that blower. KI6SKN.
You know, Chris, and I think we have a propane heater, same way. It's got a thermostat that's run off of a little, thermocouple, and that actually produces the electricity to run and turn the thing on and off, and so it doesn't need power. I did put a blower on it, but, you know, that's not necessary. That's like an option. But it's good to have something like that. Backup and redundancy. Too many of the new appliances will not function without power. That's a bad thing. Like I said, then if you have to think about that way of getting power to them somehow, if you need that, or think of these alternatives. Let me reset here. Another popular form of heat, and we all, propane burns pretty clean. But if you ever have worked indoors where they've had, you know, if you've been on a work site or you had propane heat, you can get a headache from that. I don't know what it is. I get this little nasal condition and it hurts. And then it's all better the next day. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, be very careful if you're using a propane tank with one of the burner setups. They do put out a lot of heat. Always be careful. Make sure that you're not, you know, getting any accumulation of carbon monoxide. Supposedly they're supposed to burn clean, and that's what they say. So it always pays to be careful. Appreciate that, Chris. Anybody else out there, any other comments, please come back to KF6Q.
Tom, W6AWL.
Yes, Art, go ahead.
No, I don't want to add a bunch to that, but I want to make a point that what you started tonight for an hour of Tech Tuesday can go on forever. The learning curves, what to do, what not to do, preparing yourself for all of it, is something we could go on and not, never end all of the precautions that we do. Let me put a plug in here. Coming up in October 24th starts our new CERT class, the Community Emergency Response Team. That major part of that training is to prepare yourself to handle in an emergency. And once you get good at that, then come out in the community and help everybody else. So I put a plug in for them. Come on out and sign up for the class. Go down, see Sue at the Bear City Fire Station and say, yeah, I want to learn more. That's a 20-hour course that is put on by FEMA and taught by our local firefighters. So if you want to continue on this, Tom, I don't see where we could end it, but I appreciate you bringing it into a start and working with communications as one aspect of it, and then with being prepared to handle whatever they throw at us. Tom, thanks a lot for what you're doing. W6AWL.
Comment. Yes, go ahead, comment. And appreciate that, Art. Go ahead.
WA6MQF here. Just a little bit of technical information. If there's listeners out in range of the repeater that are wondering what kind of heater and how it operates, there's two ways that the heaters operate. If they are radiant wall heaters and they have a thermocouple, which looks like a little wires coming out of a thing that's in front of the pilot light, then that heater will function when the power is down. If you do not have that, somewhere around your heater system will be a little 24-volt transformer. And that transformer is what runs the power, so the thermostat switch, when it says turn the heater on, has some energy to operate a 24, 48 volt, some sort of
switch to turn on the gas and keep it on. If the pilot lights go out, both heaters are set up to shut down. And so, little technical information. WA6MQF.
Oh, good stuff there, Bob. And Art is right. And Art, yes, we could go on forever because there is an unlimited amount of information here. But we did want to point out this evening a couple things that happen this time of year are storms and winter. Up here, freezing winter definitely could be lethal just from the cold itself. So a lot of different things out there, different ideas. Always appreciate everybody out there bringing in these comments and all this information. It's a collective work, trust me. And we will go on further with this. We'll kind of scatter this out through the winter season. Little refreshers here and there. Recommend the CERT course. Good thing if you've never had any experience in any of this stuff. It's great. Great education there. That's a good start. Anyway, so we are going to shut this down here in a bit. Any other comments? We'll send it back to you first, Mike. WB6CLZ.
I can't express enough how important CERT is. I think everybody, I think everybody should do that. They should have that as even a high school class. But great net tonight. Can't emphasize how important this stuff is, everybody. And get on 10 meters. Get yourself an HF rig and experience that. Okay, this is WB6CLZ. Everybody have a great evening.
Another little plug here for Big Bear City Fire. Every other Saturday, first Saturday of the month, every other month, excuse me, let me start over, every other month, first Saturday of the month, they alternate between CPR and first aid. Good certification if you're looking for it. If you are a CERT member, it is free. Other than that, I'm not sure what they charge, but anyway, that's at Bear City Fire in Big Bear City, and you might want to look into that. Never hurts for a refresher course. I don't think I can remember the last time I had a first aid course. Anyway, anybody else out there with any other comments before we close the net?
Tom, AWL.
LAN.
Hi, action.
Okay, let's see. I think first we had AWL. Go ahead, Art.
Let me fill in the blanks that you didn't have there. The training that Bear City puts on is by their paramedics. It is $40 for citizens that are around that want to take it. Those that take the CERT training, which is now free, get to take these courses at a free basis. So we encourage it, and we encourage you to be a part of CERT and continue to be able to support the community and help out. Tom, good job. I'm going away. Bye-bye. W6AWL.
Okay, thanks, Art. Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, good update there. Good information. LAN, go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, thanks. FYI, those that are on propane that do not have electrical or whatever you want to call it, backup for your heaters, they do make thermostats that are battery controlled, so that if your power does go out, you still have battery backup for your thermostat to turn on your heater, which some of you folks might want to look into. KD6LAN.
KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday, Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday that we can. Good information there, Bill, and, that's good to look into. And we had one person there after Bill. Please come back. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, KJ60X, Luzerne Valley, Mike here. Correct me if I'm wrong. For quite some years, I took it to understand that propane combustion, when properly fired, in regards to the right amounts of oxygen ratio to propane ratio, chloride and water vapor. Am I wrong or am I right?
Matt. Yeah, we got a comment there before we do. Essentially, propane is clean burning fuel. I think where problems get in there, if the oxygen level tends to drop a little bit, if you're in a too much of an enclosed environment, I think that's when things change a little bit. It's supposed to be a clean burning fuel. You are correct to that point, but you know, you always got to be careful. Anyway, I got a comment out there. Go ahead.
Sure, he's exactly correct. They sell what they call a catalytic heater that runs on propane that is, I'm just going to say, it's approved for running in confined spaces. But what you said, Tom, is also accurate. Once you burn up all your oxygen, your SOL, WA6MQF.
And they actually have, or had, I think they've been eliminated from California thanks to the EPA for some reason. I'm not sure why. Must have had a reason. But I think it's sold in the other 49 states. But actually with natural gas. Also a catalyst-based, zero exhaust. You mount it on the wall like a doggone flat-screen TV. Pretty cute, pretty neat. They're sized per room. However, I know they have been eliminated from California or sale in California. Not sure if it's a legal issue or a safety issue. Not sure, but who knows. Anyway, anybody else out there? Any questions or comments? Please come back.
KJ6OIX for rebuttal.
Go ahead there.
Yeah, Tom, not that I fire up the kitchen range here to warm the house. I've had a little wood stove, your basic box heater, for, about 15 years in a double-wide mobile home. And hoping to go to an airtight unit before the middle of the winter. Yet, at the same time, either way, what I'm running is, you know, a box stove with very little control over, you know, combustion as versus what I want to get an airtight. I never run a fire in, you know, the place here, but that I leave at least one window open, inch and a half, 2 inches. I always want to draw in that fresh oxygen.
You know, that's a good idea. I mean, we have a fireplace here, and obviously, you know, it should. We're going to try to set that up with a fresh air intake. I've seen that done. When that's done properly, I mean, you get actually better heat. You're not sucking in cold air from, you know, to feed the flu and the fire and all that. Seems to work a lot better. Firebox, it's on our to-do list, definitely. Safety issue, we sleep on the second floor. that's if you can, you don't have to. I think that's a good idea, a little fresh air vent of some sort. Not enough to get you freezing to death there, but letting in a little bit of air, very good idea. Like I said, even if you had a crack under the door, your carbon monoxide is actually going to leak out, believe it or not. It likes to go downhill a lot. Anybody else? Or anyway, any more comments, please come back. All right. Well, I think we've had a really interesting Tech Tuesday. Started out with emergency communications and different events that require that, different safety procedures working into what we're going to experience here this winter. Anybody out there, of course, we could go on for hours. This is a very, very big subject, and we try to keep it tune into the environment or whatever. In the summertime, we have lightning storms. We try to express concern about that. In the winter, we have cold. We have a lot of different things happening and storms that could be very dangerous. So we'll move forward, and we'll be touching on different things like this. Following a lot of articles from QST,
Let me reset real quick. I really encourage any ham out there, if you're not a member of the ARRL, if you can join, do it, even for 1 year. What you will get in return, the QST magazine, which is included, besides a lot of other little perks, and helping them support hams in government, basically, as our rep up there in D.C., good thing to do, a lot of good information, and if you can't afford that, it's great. If you want to see what it's all about, and if you can get online, they've got a lot of good information online that is free, as does AMSAT and all of these other organizations out here, too. So good to join that. Also, if you think about it, think about joining the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club this next year. Help support this repeater. Last call. Any other comments? All right, well, let's see here. If I can't find my little sheet of paper. QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q. Net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net. My goodness, we've gone over a little bit here at 2,000 hours and 20 minutes. Do you appreciate everybody out there listening? Appreciate all the comments. Always welcome. And we'll continue this on again next week. Same time, well, actually 1900 hours on Tuesday. So once again, appreciate everybody for listening up. 73 to all. Take care and be safe. This is KF6Q, returning the repeater. Normal use.